Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
I'm Duncan McLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm in Randburg today to talk to Calvo Mawela, CEO of MultiChoice South Africa, about the future of the pay TV business in South Africa in light of last week's hearings into the sector by the communications regulator, ICASA. Welcome back to the podcast, Calvo, and thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Duncan, and good afternoon to your listeners. Thank you very much for coming here. Thank you.
That's a pleasure. Firstly, what did you think of the ICASA hearings last week and the way that ICASA has approached this?
As you'll have seen in a number of presentations that were made and also with the presentation that we have made, we think this discussion is irrelevant in the first place.
Irrelevant.
Irrelevant, yeah. In the first place, this would have been a good discussion if this discussion was happening 15 years ago. If you look at where technology is today, there is no reason for you to still try to think of imposing new regulations on a narrow market like pay TV. The market has changed. It's no longer pay TV. It's audiovisual sector. Everybody is seeing the proliferation of OTT players in the market. And we are seeing free-to-air also having a constraint on the pay TV market. So in terms of audiovisual sector, we are seeing a golden age of audiovisual sector, and it's unfortunate that ICASA has narrowly defined the market as the old traditional pay TV as we know it, and more like a multi-choice investigation than a pure audiovisual sector investigation.
That's what the sector's been clamoring for, though, right? And consumers have been clamoring for is some sort of regulation around multi-choice, because the company is perceived to be too dominant in the South African market. So I guess that's where it's coming from. But you're saying that the ICASA has left this far too late and it's now there's no point in doing this anymore.
Yeah, and let me put context into it, Duncan. If you look at where we are today in terms of the audiovisual sector, we made pronouncement on our last financial year that we have lost over 100,000 premium subscribers in the last financial year. That is a big reduction in subscribers for a pay TV market like us. Where do those guys go to? More likely they are going into OTTs. Mm-hmm. If you look at our growth in terms of where we are growing at the bottom end of our market, which is where XS and EasyView are currently at. And that is the nature of how things have changed. If you look at YouTube, the amount of people that are viewing, people forget that in terms of what we are fighting for as a business, we are fighting for eyeballs. You want people to engage with your product, and the only way they engage with your product is through the eyeballs. So once people move and start watching YouTube, start watching Netflix, start watching Google and all of those, then people do not spend as much time on TV and they do not see the need to stay on TV as you see it. If you look at appointment viewing, it's dead. People just want to consume content at whatever time that they want to consume it. Gone are those days that you said, 7 o'clock, I'm going to pump this content onto you and people will be at their lounges watching that television. Mm. We're seeing it even in within the stable where catch-up has taken off tremendously and people are no longer waiting for us to push content onto them. So it's a world of the consumer in terms of audiovisual content. And people need to realize that in as much as you can say multi-choice has been dominant in this. But if you look at the whole audiovisual sector, you see a tremendous shift in terms of how people consume content. So you really need to look at this thing holistically for you to appreciate what we are facing as pay TV. If you ask me what keeps me awake at night, it's the OTTs that keep me awake at night, because people are moving away from pay TV as we know it today.
Okay, now OTT is over the top. It's a bit of industry jargon that really refers to what? Anything what isn't a traditional broadcaster?
Yeah, so OTT is a simple term that means that it's over the top, which means that person doesn't have to put infrastructure before they put content out there. It's the like of Netflix, it's the like of Facebook and so forth. So
but they do put infrastructure down.
Yeah, but you don't necessarily have to put your own infrastructure for you to be able to run an OTT service. It's like launching an app.
Right.
And many people have already said that in terms of where we are in the audiovisual sector, launching audiovisual or subscription or whatever, in whatever form that you like, it's simply like launching an app, and people will be able to subscribe to that app and be able to get on and get your content.
Okay. Just looking at what's happened in the pay TV market, though, in South Africa specifically, and let's exclude the international players that have come in here. Local licensees were licensed by the regulator, ICASA, to come into this market and compete with MultiChoice. All of them, except I think for Starsat, failed to launch, and Starsat went into business rescue and I think is still struggling to get out of that situation. Does that say anything about that MultiChoice being too dominant in the South African market, that these companies are attempted to launch, but ultimately were unsuccessful?
You are mentioning a very good case in point, especially Starsat. Mm-hmm. If you look at the business rescue practitioner's report on why Starsat has not been successful, they pick up on a number of issues. Bad strategy, bad management, and lack of investment into that business for it to thrive. So the business practitioner himself looked at this business and came to the conclusion that it was not because there was not a market out there. Mm-hmm. Just the business itself just got caught up in management issues, lack of resources in terms of the investment that is required to run a pay TV platform. But just to give you a sense of what's happening in other markets, if you look at the rest of Africa, in Angola, for instance, ZAP came in almost at the same time that Starsat came in. They are more than twice the size of MultiChoice. We're given a hide in there. We lost the whole market and they came in, because they came in with a business plan, put the effort in, focused on their business, and they were able to be successful. If you look at Starsat itself, Nigeria, they are the biggest in Nigeria. We've been in Nigeria for many years, over a decade. But they came in, put a business plan in place, and be able to target a particular market and be able to grow faster than us. If you look at East Africa, the same thing has happened with Azam coming into that area. And what we are seeing is that if a person comes in with a clear business plan that will be backed by resources, they are able to compete with us toe-to-toe. And in some markets, they've already outcompeted us. In South Africa, the only thing that you can say is that the people that wanted to get into this business did not put the necessary resources to get into that business. The business practitioner for Starsat has mentioned the bad management decisions that have been made. Telkom Media, in the beginning, they just decided to disinvest into pay TV and go somewhere else. So there is nothing that says to anybody that wants to get into this area that they are going to struggle by virtue of us having been there for a long time. People have managed to succeed.
I mean, if you were coming into this industry now, you weren't the CEO of MultiChoice, would you see traditional satellite-based pay television as an opportunity, or do you think it's yesterday's business and you'd look at something else?
No, definitely. If you were to start today and go into audiovisual sector, I will not advise anybody to come in and start a pay TV based on a DTH business. You need satellite capacity. You need infrastructure on the ground. There are many things that you need to put in just from an infrastructure perspective, whereas these days, audiovisual is consumed over the top. You just launch an app, people will be able to consume that. So those days are gone, in my view.
Now, MultiChoice has appealed to the regulator for soft touch regulations, if any regulations at all are introduced, nothing onerous. which, and you've warned that if the regulations are onerous, it could cost South African jobs and damage the local industry and damage multi-choice. What regulations, soft touch regulations, do you think ICASA could introduce that would satisfy both multi-choice while at the same time making the market healthier?
Yeah, I'm glad that you are raising this particular point because I've seen in some reports where they didn't understand our argument properly. We are saying level the playing field.
Yeah.
And leveling the playing field, which means treat like-for-like services the same way. So OTT players, they are sitting somewhere in the US and they are pushing content on here. They do not have to pay income tax. They do not have to pay VAT. They do not have to employ anybody. They don't have to have local content quotas and all those other elements. We are saying that look at what the EU is doing with regard to audiovisual content. If you look at the EU directive 2010/13/EU on audiovisual services, it's very clear. They are trying to have a very balanced approach in terms of regulating OTTs. They are saying that when you look at OTTs, do not regulate them as the same way that you regulate a traditional pay TV. Let them register to be in the country. Let them pay income tax. Let them pay VAT. The other issue that audiovisual helps with is around culture and content around a particular country. Let them have local content quotas. They just imposed about a few weeks ago a 30% local content quotas. We are saying do the same to the OTTs that are operating in this country. Let them have those basics that they have to follow in terms of making sure that we preserve our industry. And we are saying those that are saying no regulation is required, look at it in this way. If you were today going to say to MultiChoice, oh, OTTs are not paying all these elements, MultiChoice from today, stop paying income tax, stop paying VAT, no local content quotas, and all the universal service and access fund contributions and so forth, no license fees, we will be at the same level as the OTTs. Does it help our national objectives? Absolutely not. We think there are those elements that are good for the national objectives that you can impose to the OTTs so that to make sure that the playing field is leveled. All the other regulations you can do away with, but there are basics that you need to achieve the national goals, local content, paying of taxes, license fees, getting registered. That is what we are asking for.
Shouldn't you be arguing that there should be less regulation on multi-choice rather than arguing that it's the OTT providers that should have more regulation imposed on them?
We are arguing for leveling of playing field. And what do we mean by leveling of playing field? There are other obligations that are neither here nor there. For instance, we've got about, I think, 80 to 100 provisions, either through the Act or regulations that you need to comply with. Mm-hmm. We are saying many of those are irrelevant in this stage. You don't need to apply them to OTTs. But they are basic ones. And the basic ones are they have to pay income tax. They have to pay. They have to register to operate in the country. They have to have local content quotas. They have to pay VAT. And those are the basic elements that you need in a company that operates in your country for your national goals not to disappear. And we think it's good because you keep employment growing in the country. You don't stifle innovation. They continue to come with better ways of doing the content, better ways of technology to deliver audiovisual services to the sector. So we are comfortable with less regulation on OTTs. You can't regulate them like you used to regulate broadcasting. But the same thing applies with broadcasters. Also do away with many other provisions that you ask us to comply with, reports that have to be submitted every 3 months and 6 months and 9 months and many others. Do away with all of those, then we just focus on running the business on a like-to-like services.
What are the most onerous regulations that currently apply to multi-choice that you'd like to see scrapped?
For instance, I think one of the elements is the Universal Service and Access Fund. We think that discussion needs to happen because things have changed in terms of universal service and access. Everybody can access any type of telecoms. If you look at telcos, everywhere there is 3G, as we presented at ICASA, that 98% of the country is already covered through 3Gs. As to what we are trying to do with the Universal Service and Access Fund, it's still a problem. And I think you are seeing it even with USASA itself in terms of the way they get into other challenges of around expenditure and how to deliver on these universal service obligations. That is one area that you could have. We think the competitive landscape has changed dramatically. You don't have to have any restrictions around advertising. In as much as the free-to-airs are saying no, put the restrictions to pay TV and say no, 1 billion is a cap, it's immaterial. You don't need anybody to have a cap because people consume online and different platforms within the same company. They are also doing it themselves. The free-to-airs, they can capitalize on being on other platforms to generate advertising revenue. So all those restrictions are meaningless in this day and age of online. We have seen it with the newspapers and that this type of regulation, if you keep it, is just no longer relevant. This cross-media ownership and control limitations, they are meaningless. Take them out of the act. Everybody should be able to move across different platforms because they are unregulated at the moment. We can do that. Everybody can do that. So those are irrelevant, but we still get hanged on into discussion about restrictions around cross-media and all those kind of things, which I think let's do away with all those.
All right. Let's talk a bit about sport. I think that was quite a big focus at the hearings last week. What about the option of unbundling SuperSport from MultiChoice and allowing it to sell its channels to other broadcasters and streaming companies? Surely this would help address many of the competition concerns that have been raised, and perhaps it would make sense to do it in a way that MultiChoice can control rather than having the process dictated to it by regulators.
You see, I think we are addressing the symptoms and not the actual problem, because if you look at sports, how sports get packaged, look at the PSL, for instance. Sports owners, IP, the people that own sports rights, they are best placed to decide on how they should be able to put the packages together.
Mm.
PSL has got about 10 packages that they sell together. If you sell, if you get to win that tender as MultiChoice, you are obligated to offer it to free-to-air. In that way, almost all the games get a wider reach as well, as we have seen with the SABC. I mean, you will not see the difference as to whether the PSL is either with the SABC or with SuperSport. Games are almost shared equally within the two stables. So sports bodies on their own are able to find the right balance in terms of reach and also getting money out of their properties. And we have seen them doing it successfully, and the PSL is a case in point. So in terms of you trying to say, let us find a way wherein we regulate SuperSport and artificially try to find a way to make this accessible to different players, that's not how the market plays itself. The truth of the matter is that sports rights becomes accessible every 3 years. People are free to bid. In the last bid, I understand Vodacom even put a bid for the PSL. So the market itself is playing itself out. And if I take it further to the rest of Africa, we used to have almost all the leagues, La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, and many others, NBA. Those sports properties, we no longer have them because competition came in. They identified what they wanted and what their customers wanted. They went in, they outbid us and got those properties. And that's why Star Times will call itself the home of football. If you look at the properties that we currently have, we are left with EPL, Champions League, and I don't know what else we still have. Many of those have disappeared. So competition, the market itself, in terms of what people want, they go for what they want and they'll be able to bid. If they value it good enough, they are going to pay the right price for it and it will balance itself out.
Mm. I know a few years ago that Starsat approached SuperSport and asked for access to certain channels. I think it was SuperSport 3 and 4, if I remember correctly. And the correspondence that I've seen related to that matter, because it's now the subject of a Competition Commission complaint. I'm not sure what's happened to that Competition Commission complaint, because it was a few years ago. But SuperSport seemed to be quite happy in the communication that I saw to sell those channels to Starsat. It then appeared that MultiChoice said, no, we're not going to do that, and said, you can't sell these SuperSport channels to a competitor. Is your thinking quite rigid around that now? Could SuperSport at some point start to sell its channels again, or is this a no-go area inside MultiChoice?
No, there are two elements to that discussion, actually, what actually transpired there. Yeah. The first part is that you should recognize that exclusivity is part of any pay TV business. So you need to differentiate yourself by giving a content that another party doesn't have. Mm. The discussions went into the actual content, not really the channels themselves. They identify the content that they require for them to package their own channels. Discussions happen back and forth. We could not agree on a commercial rate between ourselves and them, and that's where the negotiations collapsed. So as Kwese has presented at ICASA to say, exclusivity is at the center of any television or audiovisual media that is out there. This is the essence of everything. So the question that is posed is, do you want everything that you see on SuperSport or on MultiChoice to be with StarSat? I think they will also say, no, what's the point then? Mm. Because we're just replicating the same channel. So we also have to come with innovative ways of packaging channels in such a way that there is some exclusivity to us. That's what brings customers to us. They also recognize that they have to do the same. And the commercial discussion just never bear any fruit.
Okay. But you, in theory, would be prepared to sell a SuperSport channel to a competitor?
No. So the issue...
If the terms were right.
Yeah. So, no. So let's get this right.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me be clear and not
please.
The issue is, what channels have we packaged that represent the exclusiveness that we want to keep?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So once we have agreed on the exclusiveness that we want to keep, we can allow you, as Duncan, to come to us and say, I would like to package a channel, and I can take content from this, I can take content from that. For you to say, after we have done an exclusive package for ourselves and called it SuperSport One, and just want a replica of SuperSport One, we think that's where the lines are getting blurred now how do we then give us an opportunity to have an exclusiveness in terms of our channel offering. And that's what we were debating with other competitors that came to us, that you must recognize we still need some element of differentiation within our channel mix, and don't just ask the same channel for it to be sent over to you. Also find a way of packaging your own that you will come to us and say, I've packaged my own. It's not going to be SuperSport One. It's going to be X. And there is a reason that then that becomes a commercial discussion. And I think it's a fair way of approaching content. Yeah.
Right. Now, a number of jurisdictions, the UK is an often cited example, have introduced regulations that enforce rights sharing, rights splitting. B-Sky B, or Sky Broadcasting in the UK, is required to share some of the UK football games with rival players. Do you think that Ofcom made a mistake in introducing those sort of regulations? And is there any reason why such regulations shouldn't be replicated in the South African environment?
Yeah, I mean, every environment you need to... That's why we argued very hard at ICASA that you need to have regulation that is evidence-based.
Okay.
That everything that you do is supported by you seeing what impact it will have. And before you get to even discussing whether wholesale channel offer is the right approach or not, look at the circumstances of the industry in South Africa and ask yourself and do a cost-benefit analysis and actually start from the problem. Is there a problem with the current regime that is in place? Because in as far as I'm concerned, there is no problem. The way the PSL has structured its deal, it works for the benefit of all South Africans, and there is no problem that you need to resolve. Even if you think there is a problem, then start identifying that particular problem. Look at the cost-benefit analysis of those. We heard from Dr. Christina Kafara, who has been involved in all the discussions in the UK, and she made it clear that, in fact, consumers were worse off with the splitting of this right between different competing interests. And how that plays itself is that then you need to have a BT, you need to have Vision, you need to have Sky for you to be able to have a full complement of the sports that you want to watch. And then if you look at the overall price that they ended up paying, it's much more than what it used to be in the past. So the consumers were worse off So audiovisual is one of those areas that you really need to apply the economics and the financials to be able to determine how it's going to impact the consumer at all. We might be crying out loud and say, no, split it across 5-10 suppliers. Then we'll have 5 subscriptions that you need to deal with, others more efficient than others. And if you want to still see that, then you are going to pay more for that one. So look at it through empirical evidence for you to come to that conclusion. Without that, you run a risk of getting the consumers to be worse off.
Now, the SABC said in its presentation, I think it was last Monday, they complained vociferously about the so-called must-carry regulations, which appear, they say, to entitle MultiChoice and other pay TV operators to carry its public service channels free of charge on their platforms. It argued that this benefits MultiChoice and other pay TV operators and disadvantages the free-to-air sector. Should you be paying to carry those 3 SABC TV channels?
I fail to comprehend the logic of the SABC. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you why I fail to comprehend the logic. The SABC channels are freely available anyway. You don't necessarily need a DSTV decoder for you to receive SABC channels. That's the first thing. You can put up an area, you'll pick up SABC 1, 2, and 3 today. The issue of them being on the MultiChoice platform is that it's convenience, first of all, for the subscribers. Secondly, it's about universal service obligations of the SABC where they can get to reach any part of the country. And this platform allows them to get access to all those people that might be on the outskirts of the country through this platform. So they are reasoning that there is a benefit that we get commercially for us to carry the SABC channel. I fail to comprehend because, in my view, nobody goes and subscribes to DSTV to receive SABC channels.
Are they not subscribing to EasyView because they can't get a terrestrial signal and therefore they're paying MultiChoice to access the public service channels?
I fail to understand that because you've got a free-to-air decoder that is available from government, the satellite part, even though DTT is struggling. You had Vivid from Centec that made universal access available. But for you to say to me that people go onto the DSTV platform just because they want to watch SABC and subscribe every month just for the SABC in a DTT environment that already gives them access to satellite services, I do not find the logic of anybody who's prepared to do that just to see SABC 1, 2, and 3.
Without the must-carry regulations, would you be prepared to pay the SABC to carry its channels?
No, I do not see the reason why we should be paying for channels that are freely available. As I've already said, I fail to comprehend the logic of paying for channels that are freely available out there because they are freely available. Everybody can receive those channels. They do not have to be received through the DSTV bouquet, DSTV decoder. Mm. So I'm struggling really, Duncan, to follow the logic behind paying for channels that are freely available, they're accessible to the public. Mm. Just because they come through the DSTV decoder, then we have an obligation to pay for those channels. I do not understand it because people can receive those channels anyway.
If the must-carry regulations were scrapped or amended, what would the impact be on DSTV if MultiChoice said you can't have our channels anymore?
If SABC said you can't have our channels on our platform? I think it will be a loss for both parties because I think we assist them in terms of getting reach and being comfortable that their services get a wider reach of people out there. And if they are taken out, it will inconvenience the people that subscribe to DSTV because those people then need to make sure some might no longer have aerials. It means they need to put aerials to carry on receiving the SABC channels, which is what people will do. So it will just affect the consumer, and the consumer will be worse off. And I think the SABC itself will also have the challenge of the subscriber numbers that they use to include in terms of their advertising revenue that they get out there, that might have shrunk during that period, and how soon will people be able to get to it by putting up aerials all over the country, that might also affect their revenue.
Do you agree with their assertion, and they put up slides, I can't remember what the source of that information was, but do you agree with their assertion or their claim that the SABC content is amongst the most popular content on the DStv bouquet?
No.
You don't?
I don't think they've represented the information correctly. Mm-hmm. What you see is that during specific shows, yes, they outperform some of our shows. For instance, Generations, you'll see the lights shooting up because people watch Generation at a particular point in time. Maybe Mubango also, you'll see a spike because people want to watch Mubango. But that throughout the viewing in a 24-hour channel offering, that most of the people are watching the SABC, I do not buy into that research.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned that figure of 100,000 DStv premium customers who've been lost over the last year. How much of that is directly attributable to new streaming services, and how much of it is attributable to affordability in what has been a very weak economy?
Yeah. So if you look at it, Duncan, most of them, we think they move to OTTs, and it's just based on research that we gather. Some of them then come down to compact and then supplement it with OTT. So it's a mixture of those, and then some maybe just disappear completely. But it's unimaginable that people will disappear completely coming from a premium level. Mm. Most of them are taken up by the OTT offerings. And it's based on our own research. We can't really give you the exact figures at this stage, yeah. Mm.
All right, but I think ICAS has asked you for that information, so you'll be submitting it to them.
Yeah, yeah, our estimate as to how the shift in viewing is changing, yeah.
Okay. Mm. Now, Cell C argued in their presentation to ICAS that MultiChoice is being disingenuous in arguing that Netflix, poses a major threat in the short or even medium term, that perhaps it's just nibbling away at the very top end of the market, and that the vast base of MultiChoice subscribers are still captured, for want of a better term. Do you agree with MultiChoice's assertion that the streaming providers don't really propose a major threat to MultiChoice's dominance in the industry for any period of time?
You see, those people are the same people that said we can't imagine one day where newspapers are not going to be seen going to each desk in offices and people reading newspapers every day. Look at how quickly the newspaper business has been eroded, and even today they are struggling to make ends meet on a day-to-day basis for their survival. So it's a very risky position to take if you are seeing the rapid change in terms of what is happening, in terms of viewership, in terms of people refusing to do appointment viewing anymore, wanting to view whatever they want to view at any particular point in time. So Cell C might be talking because they are not, they've just started into the audiovisual sector. What we are seeing on a day-to-day basis and on the viewing habits of people, we are seeing a fundamental change in the way people view audiovisual services. Gone are the days of pay TV as we know it, and we think it will just continue to decline. That's why we launched Showmax. That's how serious we see the threat, that we are investing in a whole lot of billions into Showmax to make it a platform that carries us into the new order. It's very clear. Online is here, and it will continue eating up the pay TV up until the old pay TV DTH disappears.
How long will that be?
I think it's around the corner. I think the margins are already getting squeezed, because if you are looking at our subscribers at the premium level, the numbers that we show, if we are going down at the rate that we are seeing now, which we assume that is going to continue to increase, and we'll just be growing at the bottom, and the bottom will also reach saturations, then I think 2-3 years maximum we'll see a very big change in the way this business operates. And if we are not careful ourselves by investing into online and making sure that we have a very good offering in terms of our online offering, this business will be dead. Just like many other businesses that looked at this thing and said, no, they're talking about this thing, but it's never going to happen. And I like the analogy of Toby Shapshak, who wrote an article that we are talking about regulating steam engines in the 1850s, whereas cars have already launched and people do not think that cars are going to be owned by everybody. Mm. We're still focusing on steam engines. So that is the correlation that we have to look. If you are going to be a businessman and see this thing coming and seeing it happening, and you still hang on to your old business model and think you're going to succeed, I can tell you this place will be a monument one day and say it used to be that big company that employed a whole lot of people. We better start moving fast, recognize that this thing is coming our way. People show that they want to move to online and they will continue moving online. Follow them, try to get as much market share as possible in the online sector.
So tell me then, if the future is streaming, how do you manage that transition while also continuing to maintain what is a vast legacy technology base and skills in the traditional satellite-to-home segment?
Yeah, it's a very big challenge, and I'm glad you're asking that question. And what we are grappling with as a business is how does our online, what our online offering finally is going to look like? And we must understand that it might be that we go backwards in order for us to be able to survive as a business. And by going backwards, which means our margins are going to be eroded, and we need to take that business plan that we used to do on the old DTH and tear it apart and start from scratch and say, this is where this business is going. When is it going to peak? When is it going to start making money? How do we accelerate to make sure that it becomes a successful business? That is what we are grappling with. Whilst at the same time, there will still be some customers that you need to service on the old DTH platform, but you need to ensure that you build this thing and you change the mindset of the whole business to recognize that the future is online. So everything that we do, every project that we do, we focus it to say how will in an online viewing platform look like? Will it be something that is still attractive to viewers that view online? How is the content mix going to look like? All those debates we are having internally, and we are trying a number of things in as far as Showmax is concerned, DSTV now is concerned, so that we make sure we understand the online business and people are within the business make sure that they understand it, they can come with propositions that our customers will really want. So that is our biggest preoccupation within the business.
At what point does it make sense to switch off the DTH satellite business? Is there a certain number of subscribers that you need to maintain the viability of that service? And once you dip below that number, because everyone's moved to streaming, do you just switch it off? Or do you have to look after that customer base until they're all gone?
Yeah, so customer is king in any business. So as long as we still have customers that require that particular service and we can be able to keep the business going on that particular service, you keep it going as much as you can. Where it becomes almost impossible for you to service, at some stage, if online becomes the only de facto service offering, then you might end up having to switch off all the DTH subscribers and let them get online somehow at some stage. But that will be determined by a number of factors, the number of customers, the cost that comes with it, and yeah, so those are the elements that you will consider eventually as to whether you move them totally online and can we have the numbers, can we be able to move them across?
Mm. When do you reach that tipping point? Is it 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years?
I think it will happen quicker than we think, Duncan. I don't want to pinpoint to a specific date as to when that tipping point will be, but in my view, it will be quicker than we think. And those people that are saying this thing is somewhere on the horizon, we see it, but we still don't know what it looks like, I think they are playing dangerously. That's how many businesses went out of business, because they kept on being pessimistic about the new technology that they are facing and eventually ran out of business.
You want to embrace it before it destroys
before
it, you.
Yeah, before the business disappears.
All right. Mm-hmm. I know this next question you get asked a lot, but I think there's a lot of interest out there and our listeners will be interested in hearing the answer again. Mm. But there are often calls for MultiChoice to offer its channels on an a la carte basis, but the company strongly resisted doing this. What is the reason?
Yeah, so our business model is not a la carte, and we are not going to do a la carte from where we are seeing how the business works. And it's precisely because with the way that we put the packages together. We think that by doing a la carte, you'll get to a situation where people will be worse off. Look at Canada, they've insisted on this a la carte move. People are paying more than they ever paid before for the package channels that they've done. And that is the nature of pay TV. Once you go the a la carte route, people pay more. If you look at us here, people do not even recognize that in the US, people ended up paying $70 just to watch the Mayweather fight. Here, you got it as part of a premium package. Not even 1 cent extra did you have to pay for it. So the way it works in terms of bringing together all these packages is that you get a balance of viewers who love different things, and therefore you are able to spread the cost across a bigger base. And in that way, the pricing then comes down. If you restrict it to just particular channels, what will happen is that I'm targeting Duncan. He only wants to watch PSL. We paid billions for the PSL. We have to focus on Duncan to get that money back from Duncan. And it shoots up the pricing. So the way the packaging works is that you are able to spread the taste of different consumers over a bigger base and therefore keep the prices down. Consumers might not appreciate it because they don't know the elements that make up the cost. But globally, it has been seen to work nicely that when you do that, people end up paying less. When you do a la carte, people end up paying more.
Mm. You mentioned the Mayweather fight. What about pay-per-view as an option in South Africa? What if I want to just watch the Sharks play the Lions on a Saturday afternoon? Is that something that MultiChoice might consider in the future?
No, we are not even considering that because it also goes down to costs. The systems need to support that particular view. The costs that are associated with acquiring those rights from the rights owners, and also we have to then determine more or less how many people will want to watch that particular game, and if the cost is X, we'll have to do X plus a margin for ourselves to be sustainable business, and that on its own as well just increase the cost of that particular product offering. So in our view, the model that we have is the best model. It makes sure that many people are able to get a variety of content while at the same time keeping the prices low.
Does the same thing apply in the streaming world, or is the model different there?
In the streaming world, if you look at what they do, okay, look at Netflix, for instance. Netflix has got a catalog of movies that we have to watch, and then you pay a fixed fee and we're able to get whatever that you want to get. There are some models where they've done pay-per-view, and it's not necessarily like the video-on-demand type of a thing. Then people are able to do movies and so forth and so forth. So you can look at our service offering around box office, where movies, it's a catalog of movies, and then you hire a movie and you watch it. So there are those elements that you can do with it. But for the overall audiovisual services that I want to call it that, and looking at the channel offerings that we give, I think you're going to struggle to run a sustainable business wherein the costs become attractive for people to continue to subscribe to your service.
And if people are going to moving away from watching linear appointment television, I think you called it, you know, watching a program at 7 o'clock in the evening, to one where they watch on demand any device wherever they are, what does that mean for the future of linear television broadcasting? I mean, on DSTV now, you've replicated most of your channels in an online streaming environment. But is that the future? Is a bouquet of linear channels going to be what people look for in the future? Or is it all going to be on demand? People just choose what they want to watch?
I think you'll see, you'll see a lot of people that want to watch more and more at whatever time that it's convenient for them to watch. That the trend is showing very clearly. I think you'll have live sports, for instance, that people can't afford to postpone because
news
as well as they break that people will want to watch. I think that will be another element. But of course, there will be some people that enjoy watching a particular show at a particular point in time. I think that is going to reduce significantly over the years, as people appreciate that I can decide on what time to view this content, that is definitely going to happen that way. But you'll still have fringes of people that will still do appointment viewing, but I think it's going to be less and less as we go forward.
All right. Before we wrap up, I know you've been quoted somewhere saying that a streaming-only option is on the cards. So in other words, you don't have to buy a decoder and a satellite dish to get DSTV Now, that a DSTV Now type product might not necessarily be DSTV Now, will be made available without having to have a dish, etc. First of all, when might you introduce a streaming-only tier on your platform, and what might it look like?
Yeah, so we are at the early stages of development of this, and it's in line with what DSTV Now offers, and we want to improve it to get it to a stage where we can go fully to market on this. It's correct. We are working on this particular product offering where there won't be any dish required. You just use an app, you receive all the DSTV channels. We are looking at pricing and how it's going to impact on our old DTH platform, and what pricing levels will be acceptable to our consumers out there. Without getting into it, I think when we unveil it, it will be something that we will want to invite you to, so that you can see what we will be offering and how good the product will be. Safe to say, yes, it's hard work within the company. The technical people, marketing, everybody is focused on getting this product ready at a particular point in time. Unfortunately, we don't have timelines to share at this stage, but we'll advise as soon as we can.
But it's early days. It's probably not a 2018 project, or is it?
Definitely not at 2018, if I may put it that way. If we are lucky to get it ready by 2018, we'll also be the first one to know.
All right, I look forward to hearing more about that. Calvo Mawela is CEO of MultiChoice South Africa. Thank you so much for talking to Tech Central today.
Thank you. Thank you to your listeners.